big name acts and a few local gems as well. On October 18th, it's a hometown rock show as the Wilderness hit the stage with support from the Astros. October 19th sees Kingston's own Luscious welcome Feral Minx from Hamilton to the Broom, with local rockers Pound Salt getting things started early. On October 24th, don't miss Canadian folk musician Ben Kaplan with an opening set by Kingston's Princess Towers. On October 25th, indie darling Sky Wallace comes to town. For additional information and to buy tickets, visit KPP Concert. See you there.
And built his own studio. Yeah.
And Douglas.
Yes.
It's 7 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario.
And you're with Aboriginal Voices.
I'm here with Douglas. Douglas and the remaining remainder of the Aboriginal Voices.
We're having so much fun.
Aren't we?
Yeah. 2 hours goes by so quickly on these evenings, and we're halfway through ours right now. We're still, and we still haven't got all of the things that we'd planned to put on.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We have a few more. I do have an interview I did with Ralph Boston.
Oh, okay, yeah, good.
And he gave us the last two Tuesdays, we did episode one, episode two, and tonight is going to be episode three. Uh-huh. And then I have, Ralph gave me enough information that we're going to have episode four next week as well.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But, we have, we're going to have some fun because it's local history that Ralph talks about.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he spent some time, not only the time where he lived in the community north of Kingston, but also he spent time doing some research about Mississauga and the Mississauga folks who lived in the area. So we're going to learn about that, and also we have a couple of requested songs tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So what are they?
Oh, now, yeah, Sebastian Gaskin. You're putting me on the spot because I haven't got them all loaded up here.
I'm sorry, never mind. Forget I asked.
No, it's all right. You're good. But what else are you doing tonight?
Me?
Yes.
Oh. I'm here doing this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you keep going.
Oh, what
now
else?
That you asked me that question.
Oh, what am I doing? Oh, goodness sakes, Douglas. I think what I'm going to be doing is telling you more about the.
You had something about four directions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and you were
did I?
Yeah. Well, you do that. Then
that's right.
The requested song is for Sebastian Gaskin, and his song is called. I am a brown man, and he had a second song called Ghost.
Hmm. Oh, Ghost. Ghost is a good one.
Yeah.
That's Tom McDonald.
Yeah, now this is really weird because I don't know if these folks are getting together because that request came through because we had played Sebastian a couple weeks ago. Brand new music to us here at CFRC.
Mm-hmm.
And... The other thing is that I had a request just this morning to play Twin Flames. And, you know, I'm looking at this and guess what? It's called Just Like a Ghost. Somebody playing tricks on us.
Probably.
Yeah, this time of the year. Yeah, getting ready for Halloween. But anyway, we do have both of those that we're going to play today. One of them, in a few minutes after we talk a bit about the Four Directions newsletter that we receive. Every week there's a newsletter from Four Directions Indigenous Students Center here on Queen's campus, and I do appreciate every time you send us information, we learn a little bit.
Yeah.
And today?
And today we have Gajijakwas,
mm-hmm.
I believe. Ellen Gabriel. Is going to be here. You remember Ellen Gabriel?
Yes.
What, like 1991?
No, 1990.
because 1991.
I just arrived back from a year
so
in
1990. Mm-hmm. She was the communicator from the Mohawk side up there in Oka, Quebec. Was it Gunasadage?
Right.
Gunasadage was in a conflict with the Canadian government.
They were not in a conflict.
No?
No.
All right.
No. They stood their ground.
Well, that's kind of a conflict.
Well.
Like the conflict was the Canadian government wanted to...
No. It was the local government who the local mayor and council...
You didn't let me finish. They wanted to enforce the laws of Quebec.
It was a municipal thing.
The municipality.
Yeah.
They wanted to enforce...
It's like the guy next...
I don't know.
The municipal...
I look at it as Canada's problem.
Well, it became
fault.
A big one.
A humongous one. It was
the Oka crisis eventually.
What, like 75, 78 days, something like that?
Yeah.
Anyways, Thursday, October 24th, from 2:30 to 4 at Matt Corey, B201.
Oh, okay, that's a big room.
That's the big room?
Yeah.
Nice. She made the big room.
Over at Matt Corey. It's just next to the Tyndall Field.
Oh, so it's a book launch.
Mm-hmm.
She's written a book, and it's called When the Pine Needles Fall. Indigenous Acts of Resistance.
Nice. Pine needles fall all the time.
Apparently. So, I'm going to say it's Gajijawa Gwa, Gajijawa, but I could be mistaken. Ellen Gabriel is going to be there. She's moderated by Isabel Saint-Armand.
Mm-hmm.
Amand, Saint Amand, and Alan Gabriel is a visiting scholar here at the Department of Languages. Nice, literature and cultures. Nice, good for that. Will you be in attendance, Douglas?
I'm hoping so.
You should buy a book. You should buy two books, actually. And wait.
Are you saying we're going to keep going with the book club?
I'd read this book.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. I have pine needles for you.
That's all I'm getting at. You can go up there and get it signed by the author, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly.
Yeah.
She's gracious, I think. And you probably should just bring your own pen, though.
Oh, okay.
Social ambassador pumpkin carving.
Wait, go back to that.
What? Wait.
Ellen Gabriel, just for listeners, because, you know, we were joking around a little bit.
I mean, joking.
Fun. What day is it? Thursday?
I was for serious, Doug.
Okay, here we go.
So it's going to be on October 24 at 2:30 till 4.
That's
at the Matt Corey B201.
That's 2 days from today.
Yeah, it'll be Thursday.
Good. And Matt Corey, and then you can ask for that.
Yeah, you get there and you say, where is the When the Pine Needles Fall book launch? And there's like a guy probably, and he'll say, point over there. And so then you just go over there. Right?
Yes.
Is that how that works?
That's how it works.
Or maybe you ask somebody. Or not. You walk aimlessly around there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'll find it. Let's see.
One more thing. What else?
Seeds.
Seeds.
Seeds of indigenous innovation.
Wow.
Growing interdisciplinary ideas in STEM. Oh. Is there rockets?
Are they? Yeah. I was going to say, are they going to blow anything up?
I hope so. And you know, if anybody could, it'd be those guys. Like, here's what we'll do.
You know, here's a question for you. How volatile are pine needles?
Oh, my gosh. In my estimation, very volatile. Anyways, yeah, so that's going on, and you can do that. And what else, Doug? Housing resource fair. Okay. I've lost sound.
Yeah, that's all right. Do one more.
The Deadly Aunties Bursary.
The what?
The Deadly Aunties Bursary. It's for an Indigenous post-secondary student must attend and reside in Manitoba.
Okay.
Or Ontario. Discuss how humor has helped you on your healing journey.
Hmm.
Application linked in post, and it's November the 8th, 2024. Info at the Deadly Aunties, aunties.com. I guess that's a comedy group.
Okay. All right. Good. Well, we're going to go to Sebastian, and we'll give people a bit of a break from our news. All right. Sebastian Gaskin. He's all the way from the Mi'kmaq territory, East Coast.
Tell me, do you find it easy picking up piece by piece? You should find peace in leaving. Now won't let me see.
I don't wanna see. Address what is real, connected to the land, we are one with each other. This is our home to discover. One piece in the land can't go back to battle. It's fire in action, casting shadows. From old to the new, let us show you the truth. Light up the path, there's a glow in the youth. Boost you to the world, this is where we live. So let the journey begin.
It feels like home to me.
I'm CJ the DJ, the host of Grad Chat, your opportunity to find out about graduate research here at Queen's. I hope you can join me every Tuesday at 4 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM. Remember, put that in, Grad Chat, at 4 p.m. Tuesdays.
Grad Chat. Grad Chat. Grad Chat. am Julian Taylor, and I'm excited that my radio show, The Jukebox, can now be heard on CFRC 101.9 FM out of Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. The show is all-inclusive. I only play music that I love and think that you'll love, too. So tune in every Tuesday morning from 10 a.m. to noon right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
We're all aware of the challenges our online spaces present, like online hate and the spread of misinformation. But how can the average person make our online world more positive? Studies have shown it takes just 10% of the people in a community to set its values. We're all digital citizens, and we all have a role to play. Join Media Smarts, Canada's Centre for Digital Media Literacy, on October 23rd for Digital Citizen Day to help make our online world a better place to be. Visit digitalcitizenday.ca to find out how you can make a difference.
Thousands of opinions are at our fingertips, but are all opinions informed? Does your information have a source? Is your social feed based on fact? Only facts can uncover the truth. Professional journalists are committed to balanced and nonpartisan reporting, to independent commentary. They cut through the spin to give you the information and perspective you need. Journalism is essential to democracy, a watchdog over the powerful, an independent voice. Journalism is more important than ever.
Ralph Boston is our guest today. I'm at Ralph's home and enjoying a nice October day with you here at and getting ready for Aboriginal Voices. And Ralph, you and I have been talking about the paper that you wrote and it's called The Mississauga People, and by Ralph Boston, and it's published in 2024. So this is fresh off the presses for us, but you're hitting a whole series for our listeners here at Aboriginal Voices to learn about the area just north of Kingston, Ontario. And you mentioned about how migration was important for Mississauga people and other peoples who have come through this territory. And we were talking last week a little bit about how the land was used by the people to get their food. And a little note that I wrote down to myself is that the phrase that you used was 20 to 100 acres per settler family. And I assume that's for the British settlers or people who are with the British government at the time coming from all around the world. But it was six times less than what the indigenous, same size indigenous family would have used on the land.
Right.
So I went and made a few charts of my own, and I brought it back and just mentioned to you about this issue of around 640 acres is one square mile. Mm-hmm. And if you had one settler family with 100 acres using the same territory, that means you would get at least six families using the same square mile as with an indigenous family. So now I'm going to turn it back to you, because you talked to me already a little bit about the idea of how much land and how important it was to each of the groups.
Well, I think one of the things that really stood out to me with that ratio is that the indigenous people were very good husbands of the land. They cared for the land, they looked after it, and they lived off the produce of the land. And consequently, they had to have a lot of land to be able to harvest what was in the land to begin with. And the settlers had a quite different approach. They came in and cleared the land of everything that was growing on it, if at all possible, unless they could use it. Trees went for building purposes. Anything that was growing was used either for its edible products, or it was all plowed under. And then they used the typical European, hence the North American, method of farming. So they were far more intensive users of the land, but they were able to rotate crops through it by virtue of technology and better seeds and produce management. Whereas the native people, they were husbands of the land. They kept it and nurtured it and maintained it and lived off what was already there and wanted to maintain it. And in that respect, they were about six times more efficient than were the settlers. An incredible ratio. But that's the reason, I think, that they wound up literally eating themselves out of the land. They ran out of food sources. And that's why there was the migration of the native people from Western Ontario, continually moving eastward until they came to the Iroquois, and then they hit a barrier. So that's an interesting little bit about land use, the difference between the settler and the Mississauga people, and also the reason for the migration. They literally used up their way of life. They had to move. And as family size increased, that just continued to put more pressure on the whole thing. So by the time we started looking at around the area where I lived, at the extreme eastern end of their territory, the Mississauga territory, it was very obvious that if the indigenous people didn't adopt the European lifestyle of food production, converting the assets of the land into viable products, into a commercial enterprise, they weren't going to survive. Mm-hmm. The native people had to keep moving. So then when they came to that limit, this is where the Mississauga people found, they could no longer live off the land the way they had by about 1950. This is when that realization came through. Mm-hmm. By about 50 or later, it became perfectly evident that unless they adopted the European lifestyle, they wouldn't be able to survive. And there was no land to move to. So they had to adopt the European lifestyle. But that began in the eastern end of the Mississauga area and developed strongly in their areas of population concentration. I'm not quite sure about the western side of the area, but certainly in the eastern, there it was obvious that by 1950 through to 1990, they could no longer live off the land as they had. They had to get jobs. They had to adopt the European lifestyle. I think that's a very interesting observation. And the figures pretty well bear it out. By about the late 1950s, there was hardly a remote farm left north of Kingston or south of Frontenac Park. The days and ways of the indigenous people had come to an end. In summary, it would seem that the territory of the Mississaugas in the Stoney area was as follows. South of an east-west horizontal line, just north of Westport, bounded by Highway 15 on the east, Highway 38 on the west, ending in the south at Highway 401 north of Kingston, there were various indigenous people that arrived in that area before it came to an end, as we've said, about 1950 A.D., The first people to arrive before the present area, 11,500 years ago, that was the Clovis people. Then about 7,000 BC, the Laurentian or archaic people came in. They petered out and the woodland people came in. That was about 5,000. And then at 1600 BP, this is when the Iroquois and the Huron came down from the Arctic, I believe, and came across Canada and settled in our study area. The Ojibwe and Mississauga people, particularly in Bedford, arrived around 1700 A.D., which is consistent with the Iroquois and the Huron coming down on the western end of this territory we're looking at. In 1834, there was a Mississauga migration returning from the Bay of Quinte area, and they spread further eastward and northward until about 1945, which was the end of the era. So you see what's happened. Different kinds of people came in, and they were superseded by another more advanced people, and it kept changing and growing, and the people kept migrating into this area. If they died out somewhere or other, the pressure of population growth push more people over to the limit of the property of the Mississauga, which is the Ottawa Valley.
And so what we're looking at is that the changes that also happened in tools that were used for hunting and fishing, and also the waterways that were available, because the Bay of Quinte stretches and reaches into the northern part of Lake Ontario by Trent River.
That's right.
And then there's a whole system of lakes and rivers.
The whole Peterborough area.
That's right. And that leads up to Georgian Bay, if you follow that.
Same form.
Last week, I was reading a text about the Ganaraska Trail, and that was used by the indigenous peoples from Lake Ontario to Lake the bottom of Lake Simcoe, and it reached up to what today is. So
there were the other tribes came in along the Lake Huron, the northern route, and came pushing down into the Peterborough area.
That's
and
right.
This is where the two different kinds of people
called
the troops. Okay, let's move on a bit from here.
Well, you know, you mentioned the 1700s. With which would be more recent for many of the people talking now about their ancestors, if they're searching it, the French and Algonquin, Ojibwe, Mississauga peoples, and the French coming into the area, they came to down the St. Lawrence River, and they used what today we still have the artifact, the Fort Frontenac, as our symbol. But at the same time, there were indigenous peoples here, and they were Mississauga. Because right down here in Kingston, we have Mississauga Point.
That's right. Well, this is where we had two different forces coming together. The French got to North America before the English. But they were not settlers. They were traders. They came primarily for the fur trade. So that they were well established. But when France was defeated in Canada by the British, it lost its ability to colonize the country. And then it sought to maintain its rapport with Quebec, because France also wished to maintain its hold on the fur trade monopoly. And that was their route, that they were going to concentrate on Quebec. Mm-hmm. And that left the rest of North America, south of the St. Lawrence, and west of the Ottawa River, to the British. Mm-hmm. But then the British found that they were so few in numbers compared to the French, and also the Americans were coming up, and they wanted to take over Canada. So this was why the British felt it so important to adopt the Mississauga people. All along the shore of Lake Ontario, Kingston, Toronto, Hamilton area, and that led them into the north shore of Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. The British kept fighting from little forts to maintain that property. And they had just a small number of British people, but a large number of native people. So that's why they wanted to buy the land from the Mississauga people that were already there, and then trade it back to them for protection. Mm-hmm. But the two-way deal said that for the land that we are going to protect you from, you've got to work with us to keep the Americans back. And the numbers of people from the U.S. that came across the border as migrants and the British gave land too, and seeds and tools to farm along that shoreline of Lake Ontario and as far inland as the rivers carried them. That you found that that was really something that allowed the British to support the native population that we find as the Mississauga interesting to us today.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ralph, you were talking about what's the conclusion of this part of your paper, because we're going to talk a bit more about the western part of the folks in Mississauga coming, but this area that are north of Kingston is important.
I think the important conclusion I came to was that the British, with their land management and management of the indigenous people, accomplished their goal. The land along the St. Lawrence River and Lake Ontario, well back into the interior, had been settled. The Americans to the south were no longer attempting to invade Canada. And although the Mississauga people were not belligerent and not very good warriors, they occupied the land and discouraged the Americans from invading across Lake Ontario because of the number of them and the fact that the British Army would support them. So that was a very important factor. Now, in the individual areas, population centers that I looked at, reference materials that I found in Kingston, Sunbury, Elgin, and Westport libraries were very useful in indicating how this was brought about. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to dig further, the best source of information I found in all the work I did was the local libraries. You have to work at it to get these snippets of information. But, oh, it's a wonderful exploration. It really is. And if anybody is interested, that's what I would suggest they start and look. They'll be just intrigued at what went on in their own community, for instance. There's another book, The History of Frontenac Park. This was very useful and has been left with Queen's University Biological Station. For recreational reading on the Arctic lifestyle of living off the land in northern Alberta, Permanent Astonishment by Thompson Highway is recommended. Also, when writing on the subject of elements and indigenous style, a guide for writing and about indigenous people by Gregory Younging is recommended. So there's homework of people who want to chase that bit any further. But reading those reports, almost a diary of happenings at the local level, was both amusing and fascinating, as well as information providing. I'll stop there for a moment.
Ralph Boston, this is a great moment to stop and listen to a song. Logan Statz, and he's from Grand River area, uh-huh. And he wrote a song, and it's a little bit about the river, how important it was to uh-huh. his family and himself. So we'll go to that now.
When it goes, the best love I've ever known. And there it goes, right out the window. Should have washed away my sins in utter honesty. Should have vanquished all my demons and broke me from that cage.
should have washed away my sin in utter honest rage. Should have vanquished all my demons and broke free from that cage.
So these are after notes by Ralph.
Well, we've pretty well covered the origins of the Mississauga people as related to the land that they occupied in the area that I've described along Lake Ontario and Lake Erie and northward somewhat. It's also possible that the west shoreline of the Champlain Sea at some early time ran closer to Kingston than shown in the map we have included in our report. It probably ran eastward, west, somewhere between Opinicon Lake and the present Highway 401. It is known that the glacial ice grew south, then receded north some three times over the glacial period. It is even reported that the glacial ice sheet reached south along the shore of Lake Ontario. It apparently extended at one point as far as 50 miles south of Rochester. Mm-hmm. Now, this is fascinating because when you realize that that great depth of ice moved three times over the land, no wonder it scoured the rocks north of Kingston, north of Westport, to be uninhabitable, despite cottagers on lakes. So that was a very interesting observation. But we have to realize the force of the ice and its impact on the land and how it's changed the development in the area that we study for both native people, the Indians, and for the cottagers that followed later on.
I leave the porch light on just in case. Open that door, swings, and I see your face, and I how will I even
know? And I keep your photograph to this day, wishing and hoping that you're okay. And I'm missing you now.
I never happy down my rave. Zahonga dilita laurave, zernahonga aneta konerave, dahonga.
that's inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me. We've left your bedroom in its place. Posters and memories unerased. And I'll never mind.
Standing in the doorway, I hold back my tears. Seems just like yesterday, although it's been years. And I'm missing you now.
I never not be down, I love it. All the same, love remains. All this hurts inside me. Call your name to this day. Wish you were home beside me. Just in case, open that door swings and I see your face. And I, I'll leave
beside me.
I leave the porch light on just in case. Open that door swings and I see your face. And I.
Hi, this is Chelsea.
And this is Yayi, and we are Twin Flames.
You're listening to our new single, Just Like a Ghost.
Could my hand watch me bleed? Jump through a photograph, make believe. You said I'm sorry when I needed it most. Show up in my dreams just like a ghost.
Did you? This is the sound of 100 children playing without a care in the world. Except for 12 of them. Because 12 of every 100 children live in poverty and are probably hungry. Let's make sure food banks are full for anyone who needs them. Just $16 donated to Feed Ontario can provide lunches for a hungry child for 1 month. Learn how you can help at feedontariotogether.ca.